Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Alex Caruso podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. Ah. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, that was maybe my favorite moment of the season. And the Lakers beat the Celtics.
I mean, I'm just happy that they fixed the yogurt machine, the frozen yogurt machine. They just, like, you know how in Castaway, Tom Hanks has Wilson because it's like all he's got anymore. That's what the frozen yogurt machine has been for me the last like 15 games or so. And when I came in, they had little cups on it and somebody told me it wasn't working. And I just like, I could only imagine the look on my face was just so sad. And, so between that and Alex Caruso, you know, creating a Renaissance painting for all of us of reactions, it so was, great. You know, it's all I have at this point.
So I was in charge of the recap for Silver Screen tonight, and I told Harrison, I was like, a typical recap is going to get us like 4 clicks. Nobody's going to read this.
Yes.
I told him, let me have some fun with this Caruso moment. And so Jen was watching. You've been to my house. You sat on that couch. Mm-hmm. We have a U couch, and Jen has like her corner office, and I have like my corner office. And I'm writing up this quote unquote recap, and I have tears coming out of my eyes. and Jen's like, "What is your deal?" And I was like, "Babe, I just got to write that somebody shat on the court."
It's the little things, right?
It's the little things. And so, but that turned out well.
Three more games. We're going crazy.
We're almost
and
there.
Like we've almost made it, and we are limping to the finish line mentally. So I'm glad we're, yeah.
I said this to you before we got going. And today's show, by the way, we're going to talk about Kemba Walker and Jimmy Butler. And who we prefer between those guys, making the cases for each of them. Mm-hmm. So I promise we're going to get to that here in a second. But I said this to you before we got going, and it really struck me over the course of this game how much more fun this season would have been if the Lakers just rolled out the G League team. Once the season was over, once they started shutting guys down, like, I don't need that. I don't need to see more Rondo. I don't even need to see more JaVale McGee. I know what he is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain, I mean, and to JaVale's credit, he's turned it around. I've actually enjoyed watching JaVale, but yeah, and like watching KCP like blatantly try to put up numbers for his next contract, and just like, I love watching Jonathan Williams and Caruso and Jamario Jones. It's cool to watch him. You know, he was miraculously like a plus 23 in a game they won. They lost by like 18 or so. How do you do that? And that's the type of guy that Jones is. He's, you know, somebody that's always in the plus of the plus minus or usually is. And even if he only scores a handful of points, I just love how they compete and play. And it's just, I'm normally not a, I kind of get irritated at people that are like that, like playing the right way and this and that. It's just like this season sucks so bad. it's just like basketball becomes like this morality play. Like Don McLean, for example, I don't know if you saw that, was like killing James Harden last night about in the Rockets Clippers game. And the Rockets are like killing the Clippers while they're doing that. And like, for me, like, you can play the wrong way all you want, but
if you're winning,
like, win the game, like be good at it. Like, there's no, I don't believe that there is a right way or wrong way to play the game.
Yeah.
But when you're not winning, it's just a lot more fun to watch guys that really give a crap and go out there and play hard. So I've enjoyed them, and I'm with you. I wish they would have had a bigger role earlier.
I'm going to phrase it differently. It's not necessarily like an approach to the game or anything like that. It's more an approach to the situation. There's a cynicism that comes with KCP just gunning for numbers.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
There's an innocence that comes with, no, I'm going to get where I need to go by doing the right things.
Yeah. And Jonathan Williams running his ass off every single play. Yeah.
That's what I buy into more than, because a lot of times that stuff becomes masks for some other
coded
stuff.
Language. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I like college basketball because they still play defense. Anywho.
No bat flips. The Venn diagram of those people are,
it's a circle. Yeah. It's the world's lamest circle. We are going to talk, like I said, about Jimmy Butler and Kemba Walker. And I'm going to basically introduce this as I think both guys are very good players. They both have question marks as they come over. And I think that makes this conversation all the more interesting, right? Like, it's a conversation between Jimmy Butler and Kevin Durant would be 3 seconds long, right?
Right, right.
But what I'm looking forward to talking about both these guys about is there are question marks and whether or not they fill them and what yours might be compared to mine. I think that makes it very interesting. So we went a little long on talking about the game. Ironically, but we are going to take a quick second here, pay a couple bills, and then get back to talking about Jimmy Butler and Kemba Walker. Today's show is brought to you in part by Wyze. That's W-Y-Z-E. Do you have anything in your house that you feel like you need to keep an eye on at all times, or at least as often as you possibly can? Well, then Wyze is the solution for you. For only $20, you can mount one of these cameras. It has 1080p video. It's super clear. They have night vision. They have two-way audio. For example, right before I started recording this, like literally 5 seconds ago, my dog started barking. If I was not home and I noticed that she was barking, or I just wanted to make sure I could check up on her, and in the process of checking up on her, I found out that she was barking, I could whistle at her through this two-way audio, and that generally works pretty well. So I want you guys to check out Wyze.com, Wyze.com/locked, to check out everything that they have to offer. They have great packages and an incredible app that you can log into as well if you become a customer. So check them out. That's Wyze.com/locked to take advantage of the special offer. Let's get back to the show. Because he's the one who was actually linked to the Lakers. He has been now. Now, the other two times he was linked to the Lakers, it was the Lakers considering trading for him, and ironically not being able to because of the way that they have gone about building the team. They didn't have the contracts to actually match up CBA-wise with the Minnesota Timberwolves when they were trying to do this. This is the first time, and apparently, according to Howard Beck, there is interest on the part of Jimmy Butler to either going to the Lakers or to the Nets. Which, could you imagine the Lakers missing out on Jimmy Butler to the team they sent D'Angelo Russell to?
I mean, I suppose in that framing, it's rough. I would not shed tears if the Lakers don't sign Jimmy Butler. Sure. And I guess that gives you a sneak preview into where this might be going. But I could see how that could be interpreted in a bad way. I don't see it as such a bad thing.
I don't think it's not necessarily Jimmy Butler specific. It's free agent target X. You know that we were supposed to get, or the Lakers were supposed to get, as a result of sending all these guys away. All right, so let's talk about Jimmy Butler. We'll start with positives. Positives, plays really effing hard. Mm-hmm. Good defender, solid defender, and plays bigger than his position, which makes you think maybe he might age decently, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say are the positives to Jimmy Butler's game beyond that?
I think Butler has a very translatable game to the playoffs when it becomes a very switchy, big wing type of game, or at least those are the guys that generally thrive in those environments. It's been a while since he's been particularly deep in them, but I do think he's a guy that when it becomes a grind, it slows down. He's, you know, a guy that will be able to shine in those type of situations. He's also a guy who's pretty clutch. You can put the ball in his hands at the end of the game and he can create himself a shot. Mm-hmm. And that's something that also his size factors into that. And he's a well-rounded player. He's not the defender that he used to be, but he's still good. Mm-hmm. And he's someone where, you know, if you have a small ball lineup of, I don't know, Lonzo, LeBron, Jimmy Butler, Brandon Ingram, and whomever you want as the fifth guy, Kuzma or Hart, you can do a lot of things with that a playoff type of situation. So I think that's probably where I would make the best case for him, and that it really, his game really translates, I think, into the postseason.
You want to know my hottest Jimmy Butler take?
Let's go for it.
He would have been a Hall of Famer if he played in the 90s or the 80s.
Oh, I don't think that's that hot of a take at all. I think that his game definitely, you know, projects backward into that. And that's not to say that he has an antiquated game. Yeah. It's just he's like a very good player, a sometimes all-star player. He made it not this year, but the previous four seasons. And, you know, that could have been 8-time, 10-time type of all-star had he played in like the 90s. I agree with that.
It says something about his talent level that he was able to actually translate an old school game the way that he's been able to this point. My big, and this is where we get to the concerns here. My big question is, how does that continue to translate? And how does it translate specifically on the roster that he would be on with the Lakers? Because right now he's shooting, I believe, 35% from three, and he's only taking three a game, which really makes me nervous considering what we saw a lack of spacing due to the Lakers this year. That's where my concerns start with him. Where would you go beyond that?
Well, he is still an efficient offensive player. He's a, you know, 57% true shooting guy. He was 58% last year. But in terms of his weaknesses, I feel like his biggest weakness is probably as a spot up shooter, and he's not bad at that. It's just not something that, you know, LeBron driving a kicking to Jimmy Butler for an open spot up three, like, that's an okay play, but it's not something that he's really going to thrive off of. My biggest concerns with him actually are off the court. One thing I would address this differently 2 years ago, but from covering the team and being there on a regular basis, it's something where it's like, dude, everything is such a big freaking deal. Like every little
especially
thing
on this team,
and it's to an obnoxious extent. And he's had a hard time dealing with conflict or stressful situations in Minnesota and in Chicago and in other places. And so, like, when he's got – if he comes here and there are all of these stresses and, you know, dumbasses like me are asking – are making way too big deal. You know, in the third quarter with 1:30 left, you didn't rotate on defense. And it's just like, is he going to handle all of that particularly well? And those are my biggest concerns. Even there, you know, he's got a lot of mileage on his legs, and that's something that's been talked about as a Tibbs guy, right? Tibbs type of mileage. He's turning 30. All of that's valid. I'm actually more concerned about the, can he deal with all of, without just extra all of this is, without it becoming an issue. And I have more worries about that than even his injuries.
Building off of that point,
or minutes, I should say. Sorry.
Building off of, I think he has injury. Like the knee thing, he missed significant time.
Sure.
I think removed his meniscus. He didn't even, like, he removed his meniscus in order to come back quicker, which doesn't end well, usually.
I'll just read off his games played the last few years. This year he's at 64. Now he had some weirdness in Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. And he's been relatively durable. But year before that, 59, 76 2 years ago, which is good. But 67, 65, 67. Mm-hmm. So this is a, you know, 15-plus games missed per season, usually, type of guy. And Lord knows that's not something we need more of.
Yeah, especially with this training staff. The other thing, too, you mentioned the off-court concerns and the way he handles the media and stuff. I don't know how he handles LeBron's passive aggressiveness. If there's one thing type A personalities, you and I being one a piece, if there's one thing that we do not enjoy, it's somebody who just kind of needles here and there, right?
Yeah.
And I think on multiple occasions, if LeBron and Jimmy Butler were to pair up, would have several occasions where Jimmy would just blurt out to LeBron, just fucking say what you want
just
to say.
I was just going to say that. Just you say know? It, MF. Or like, yeah,
right.
Exactly. Like, that's how I am with people that kind of dance around it. Like, I will confront them and be like, yo, let's talk about it.
Let's talk this out.
That may be a good thing with LeBron, right? And that may be something that LeBron respects. And I doubt that, you know, NBA is full of killers, and I doubt LeBron has not played with other guys like that, right? And that may be actually a good thing alongside LeBron. But I do, Butler would not be putting up with that as just being the normal course of action of LeBron rolling his eyes when he misses an open spot up three that LeBron created or something like that. Yeah. Butler would certainly address that.
And then getting back to, before we move on to Kemba Walker, getting back to the basketball side of things. So you talked about, you know, LeBron passing out to Jimmy Butler and him missing or having an opportunity to shoot a spot up three pointer. You and I talked a few shows ago about the Lakers shooting specifically and the situation that the Lakers present shooters and how that tends to make them worse, right? There's a good chance the 35% that we saw last year drops down even further. And then what that does is that allows those teams, remember the analogy you used where you have so many points that you can set aside to guard certain things.
Yeah.
Now defenses allow, they are given a few extra points to make up for other guys elsewhere, usually specifically LeBron. And again, with LeBron's passionate aggression and Jimmy Butler's sometimes lack of self-awareness, not sometimes, a lot of times lack of self-awareness, I see that not ending well.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to take a quick second here, pay a couple bills, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Kemba Walker and then finish up the conversation by talking about which of the two we prefer. All right, I'm going to start this by saying, because I'm probably going to sound more down on Kemba Walker than you will, I think, in this segment. To be completely frank, I'm not really fans of either guy. They would be decent options if they don't have any other options. But I want to start by saying Kemba Walker is maybe my favorite non-Laker of the last few years and is definitely my favorite college basketball player of all time.
Okay.
That Big East tournament that he had, where he laid that dude out basically to win the tournament, was a magical moment. But anyway, with that, that's not the lone positive, but I'm going to be hard on him. But I want you guys to know it's coming out of, I do legit like the guy, and I liked him as a player up to this point. Let's start with positives, though. And I'll let you start with it because you've talked a lot about how weird it is that the Lakers don't have somebody to handle the pick and roll.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to start with. Kemba can score out of ball screens. He's somebody that you could put the ball in his hands, and he's in, I think, the 91st percentile. He scores 1.01 points per possession off of when he's the pick and roll ball handler. That's really high, and that's an important play type because that is usually what defenses want is for the ball handler to shoot a mid-range pull-up jumper with a hand in their face coming off of the pick and roll. Kemba's a guy who scores at a high enough clip to where how you normally defend the pick and roll, like with a drop coverage or something along those lines, where you're allowing that type of shot where it's not a great idea to do that with Kemba. He's an exception to that. And so that alters what defenses can do. It opens other guys up. Mm-hmm. And it's above all else with this particular team, the Lakers don't have anyone else that can do that. So he could single-handedly turn what is a real weakness on this team into a strength. Mm-hmm. I also think that he puts Lonzo into some different roles. I kind of go back and forth on what the impact would be on Lonzo. On one hand, I could see them fitting really well together. I also didn't like how Lonzo kind of like faded into the background at times when he was figuring out how to share the ball with another ball handler this year. Does that get exacerbated alongside Kemba? So that's kind of the argument that I'm having. I need to watch tape, and I'll be, you know, making Kemba Walker videos and for, you know, when the Lakers are targeting him as a free agent and all that. But that's my big thing, is he can score out of ball screens. He's kind of like a diet Kyrie. We know that type of player fits alongside LeBron and can do some damage. So that's the biggest pro I can add to that, along with he's pretty good on like catch and shoot threes, and that's something that he can score, I think, better than Butler off of LeBron's shot creation. How about you? What do you like about him?
I agree with everything that you said there. I would add to it that like he makes LeBron better. You can't say that about Jimmy Butler.
That's interesting.
So one thing that I really want to see more of next year is LeBron as the screener. And right. If you have Kemba Walker as a threat And LeBron now is facing a defense that's rotating to him with only maybe one or two dribbles to the basket. I legit don't know how a defense stops that, right? Especially if they're surrounded by enough shooters that there's decent spacing on the court. So in that respect, I think that helps too. And then the other thing, so one thing that you mentioned Kyrie. The time that LeBron played with Kyrie, and I think Kyrie was really underrated, and I think it's why he forced his way out of there, because he didn't get enough credit for this. But who hit the biggest shot in that series?
Yeah, it was Kyrie.
Kyrie, right?
Yeah.
And I think just having somebody else out there on the court that you can go to. So this year, every time that the Lakers were playing in a close game, it was basically give LeBron the ball at the top of the key and let him try to figure out how to attack these defenses. Mm-hmm. If you give a second, if you just offer up a second option, just inherently, that means the defense is going to be that less well equipped when LeBron has the ball up at the top of the key. So I just say those things, it makes a ton of sense why it might work.
And to further that point, let's kind of compare what a Kemba LeBron pick and roll would be versus a Jimmy Butler LeBron pick and roll, because Butlers can do some things out of that too. But if it's a Butler LeBron pick and roll, you just switch that.
Yeah,
you just switch. Because you're defending those guys with the same type of defender. Mm-hmm. You can't defend Kemba with the same type of defender that you're defending LeBron with, and vice versa, right? So switching that puts, you know, a bigger player on Kemba, and Kemba's going to use his speed on them. Or if you're looking to stay with Kemba, it puts the smaller guy on LeBron, and when LeBron gets you on his hip, like LeBron's still really good at using his size and speed to seal smaller defenders. That's a more difficult combo, even if that's not a slight to Jimmy Butler. It's just the pieces kind of complement each other a little better than two similar type of players.
My other thing, so you mentioned the Lonzo Kemba fit. One of the things I'm legitimately worried about is Kemba's defense as he gets older.
Yeah.
Because he's only like 5'11".
Yeah, that was one thing. I saw him recently in person, and I wasn't even looking for it. I was just like, damn, Kemba is short. Like, he was noticeably shorter than Rondo, who's listed at 6'1", just like Kemba is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's a small dude relative to other NBA players, of course.
So I think Lonzo helps a little bit in that regard, but I don't know if he helps enough.
Can he defend in the playoffs? Can Kemba defend in the playoffs? That's my biggest concern with him.
I don't think he can. Because look at the guards that he's going up against in those playoffs, right? Like, he's going up against a Donovan Mitchell, who's going to want to attack him. He's going up against Steph, right? And he's going up against Russell Westbrook, who, like, you know, I'm less worried about. But still, it's the West is littered with guards who, Chris Paul, who would want to take advantage. Like, teams, one thing that happens over the course, and we've never had to talk about it on this podcast, but one thing that happens over the course of a playoff series is teams find a weakness, and then they hammer that bitch home.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, man. And, like, Kemba's a solid defender. It's just there's certain limitations that he can't overcome due to his size. Like how are you going to switch with Kemba? Mm-hmm. And if he gets on a wing, can he check a wing? Probably not, you know? And so there are certain complications that there are just things that you can't do, and that's more of the case for Butler, right? Having Jimmy Butler doesn't mean that you can't do certain things, where in Kemba's case, it probably does.
Yeah. My other concern here with Kemba Walker is I'm not sure. So we talked about how he might age on the defensive end, but I also don't know how he's going to age on the offensive end. Now, this is less of a concern because the Lakers have a finite window here with LeBron James, so you just try to maximize your return on that window, which I get, you know. But I also don't want to be in that post-Dwight Howard, Steve Nash freaking purgatory that the Lakers were in after that era.
That'd be so frustrating, man, for us to go through all of this rebuilding and then just have like a year or maybe two of like maybe contention and then be right back
and
to
right back square, at it.
Right back to like 2013 or 14 again. Yeah. Come on, man.
It would be brutal. So with Kemba, as we mentioned, he's only 5'11". And so one of the things that I was doing in researching, not only for this, but also for an article that I wrote a little while ago about Kemba, I talked to people who cover him. And and I asked, like, what does it look like when Kemba's struggling? And they said there's a larger point guard on him, or the team has the ability to switch, and he just gets engulfed in late.
Yes. And that's a common theme with, like, smaller guys who are bad dudes, and that happens in a seven-game series a lot more than it does in the regular season.
Yeah, and I don't think – like, obviously, that's not – his lateral quickness isn't getting better as he ages.
Sure, sure.
Right? So right now, I'm trying to look at how old he is. He is 28. He's about to turn 29. He's 28 years and 331 days old. Mm-hmm. So he's about to turn 29, which means if you offer him – because you have to get him at a max. You aren't getting any of these guys at any kind of discount or any kind of shorter contracts, right? Mm-hmm. There's too many teams out there with money. Mm-hmm. So that means you're paying for the 29, 30, 31, and 32 age seasons. And small point guards historically do not age well.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as I like him, this is why I started the segment by saying, you know, just hyperbolizing him as best as I could. These are legit concerns about this guy. And if he falls off at all, you need somebody, in my opinion, this signing that the Lakers make this offseason has to be somebody who is at least on LeBron's level over the course of their time playing next to LeBron. And if Kemba slips at all, the Lakers are screwed. Because then it's just another guy that LeBron has to carry, and I don't know if he's going to be able to carry him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's this is a tough one, man. Let's talk in segment three about the, you know, what do we do with this? Because I got some thoughts on just the whole premise of this in the first place.
I think we're in segment three already.
Are we really? Okay, well.
So let's talk in segment three about this.
Let's do that. I don't like that we're having this conversation in the first place.
Thank you.
Like, yep. It's not just for the sake of, like, hey, we got to record a podcast and think of a topic, right? Mm-hmm. But just if it comes down to a Kemba versus Butler thing, now it's better than not getting anyone, mm-hmm. right? But the Lakers have been too flippant in how they've discarded assets to end up with a Kemba, Jimmy Butler type of guy.
Yep.
Like, the way you handle this and just discarding everybody, like, end up with a LeBron level guy, a Kawhi level mm-hmm. guy, one of those, like, these are some of the baddest dudes in the game. And Jimmy and Kemba are very good players. They're all stars or borderline all stars. They are not, like, baddest dude in the game type of players. And so I, you know, it won't be the ultimate failure if they end up with those type of guys, but it's not like it will not have made all of this worth it. If that makes sense.
No.
Nor does it make me think, like, oh yeah, you know, LeBron and Jimmy or LeBron and Kemba, yeah, we're title contenders next year. It's just like you gotta, the kids have to make huge leaps right away, and you've got to nail your smaller moves and not have them be, you know, Rondos and Lances, and have them be Ori's and Fishers and Ariza's and those type of dudes.
That was going to be exactly my point, is that if these guys are your signing, that puts a larger emphasis on the margins, and we know that they are not good on the margins. And the other thing too is the Lakers don't have a safety net here. There is no – so one thing that we learned – and now, you know, Brian Windhorst has you know, his axes to grind, I think. But I think he was being honest when he went on the Silver Screen podcast and said that, you know, a lot of teams out there are just really concerned they won't trade for Brandon Ingram right now, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And then Lonzo Ball is also coming off of a significant amount of time that he missed. And it's not like you can get a great player for Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart. Now, maybe the Lakers move up high enough in the lottery to where some of these issues are fixed for them, but they don't have the assets right now to trade for an Anthony Davis or a Bradley Beal. And like, look, you and I mock the Jason Christ thing. Like, we do. But he's at least healthy, you know.
Sure.
And so my concern here is, all right, so if you go with a guy like Kemba Walker, you go with a Jimmy Butler, if that's who you walk away with here, you now have to hit homers on the margins, with knowing that the trade to fix all of this isn't necessarily there right now.
Yeah, I agree to an extent. I don't agree with that the Lakers don't have the requisite assets to trade for an Anthony Davis or Bradley Beal, even in their current mode. And that's not something that, like, I don't think there's going to be a great market for Anthony Davis. This is something that you and I disagree on, and I do think there will be teams that have something to offer. I don't think there are going to be a lot of them that are really willing to, you know, empty the clip in order to get him. So if, you know, I have no problem if somebody regards Jason Tatum as the best prospect between the Celtics and the Lakers. That's fine. What I've always had a problem with is he's not better than Lonzo and Brandon,
right, yeah,
and Kuzma. And, uh-huh, like, come on, get the hell out of here with that. And their picks are no longer these really attractive. Like, it's, yeah, the Sacramento pick is going to be probably the 14th pick in the draft. They've got a Memphis one in the future, but that's top 8 protected this year, and top 6 better. Protected. Right, and there's a chance. Well, we'll see. They may rebuild. That's probably the most promising one. But there's nothing in what Boston has to offer that's just like, damn, that is a premium asset. Like, Tatum has been unbelievably overrated based on, yeah, the period of time where everybody watches games, and, you know, it's easy to project, like, oh,
it
he's
is
young,
wild, he was man. It's crazy how, like, he just skates by.
Yeah,
and it's and insane.
And I've seen that change a bit over the second half of this season of, yeah, people being like, he's a really good prospect, and that's fine. NBA Twitter and just, like, narratives in general, we really struggle with good. Like, mm-hmm, it's either trash or goats, and, yeah, like, all-stars, future MVPs. But, like, we struggle with good or potentially very good, mm-hmm, right? And that being something that we can wrap our heads around. So, like, he's a good prospect. He's a good prospect. He's not like Trae Young or Luka Doncic or doing what those guys are doing right, yeah, now. He did it at a higher level. I will give that to him. But I don't know, man. Like, I think that the Pelicans can't end up not moving him. Now, maybe they wait till the next deadline. I think it happens in the summer, but you got to have two to tango. And I think the Lakers do have the flexibility to be able to make a trade like that. The Ingram thing certainly hurts. You're absolutely right on that. But bringing it back to, like, Kemba and Jimmy, like, if, you know, if Kemba's your third guy or if Jimmy's your third guy and you trade for Anthony Davis, okay, yeah, I can get behind that.
I would argue you kind of sort of have to. If you get either of these guys, you kind of sort of have to pull off a trade and land Anthony Davis.
I agree with that. But if the Lakers are moving these young dudes for something less than that, and we end up with, like, Kemba and, I don't know, Bradley Beal's good, but he's not an Anthony Davis type of guy. Like, let's say, you know, for this, because they'd have to for the sake of contracts, they trade everybody for Bradley Beal. Mm-hmm. And you go into next year with LeBron, Beal, Kemba, and the Merry Minimums. Like, that's not a title team. That's a really good team, but it's not a championship contender. So I don't know, man. I'm going to be upset if they move the kids for, you know, and not anything less than Anthony Davis, but he's got to be a really, really high-end guy.
I don't know. I mean, you just kind of pointed out how tough it is for us to do, like, good, you know. But I don't know how good the player has to be after Anthony Davis, you know. Like, Anthony Davis is only available because of circumstance.
Right. So, and there are a lot of guys like that.
Yeah. The gap between him and the next player who the Lakers might be able to get with those kinds of assets is miles.
Right, we're talking, like, maybe guys who are on the market, Beal, and Beal's really good,
like a CJ McCollum.
Wow, that was weird. Like, yeah. but that's what I mean, that's what,
yeah,
and there are guys that get moved that, you know, like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But I don't know, man, like, I'm afraid of the Kemba Jimmy scenario, because that means that they did not hit the home run that they wanted to. Yep. And I'm afraid they're gonna chase it. And does this get to a point where they're like, where they're able to be like, hey, you know, we wanted to make a run at this with LeBron. Do they make desperate moves in order to try and force that to happen? Or can they accept, like, hey, like, they need to sign the second guy.
Yeah.
It can't just be by trade either. You can't trade everybody for the second guy and expect to be able to field that sort of team as well. So I don't know, man, like, this whole Kemba Jimmy thing, I just don't like that we're entertaining this in the first place. And if that's what it comes down to, they will have missed what their stated goal was.
I'm happy that you were the one who made this point, because this is where I wanted the podcast to go anyway, but I'm always the guy who's slamming the front office. But this is really the concern. Like, this is really, this is not who we signed up for when they traded D'Angelo Russell. This is not who we signed up for when they didn't even offer anything to Julius Randle. Like, this is what is it, a bait and switch? Yeah, it's a bait and switch. Like, it's just, here's this guy who we can get, and then here's, you know, a Saturn. I drove a Saturn, by the way, and it's still going.
You currently
drive one.
A Saturn, yes.
Yeah. I liked my Saturn. But anyway.
It's not necessarily slamming them. Like, I would be pissed if they don't sign anybody.
Right? Like, right.
That will be an interesting version of me on podcast for sure.
Yeah.
So, like, I won't be like, damn it, we signed Kemba Walker, like, or Jimmy Butler. It won't be that. It'll just be like, I don't know, man. Like, it just wasn't worth all of what they did to get to that point.
It would be an apprehensive me. As a result of signing either of these guys, it would be me saying, like, okay, they did this, but they better not do more damage to try to compete with these two guys, you know?
Sure. Right.
That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast, this week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Shouts to Himalaya, shouts to Wise, and make sure you guys get your questions in to iTunes for Sunday/Monday show. We're getting to a point here with the number of questions where I might have to just, like, consistently turn that into a 2-day mailbag kind of thing, especially this time of year. We are also getting to the player review portion of the season. We only have, what, in terms of actual days, because they have one game tomorrow
Tuesday, I think. So
they're done on Tuesday. So
I think that's the final game.
We only have one more traditional show, really, if you're counting this stuff, maybe two traditional shows. So we're sliding into the off season. This is kind of the intro to it. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe over it. I'll talk to you guys next week.